Welcome to the show. I'm Derek Kennedy. As schools and universities prepare for a return to mostly in-person classes in just a matter of weeks, will enrollment rates be on the decline? No, not due to COVID-19, but do students and parents fear the cost of a traditional collegiate education? Today and Another Thing discusses student loan debt and what Massachusetts is now doing to help.
I'm Maya Schwader. We'll hear from State Senator Eric Lesser about his Student Loan Borrower Bill of Rights that just passed. It aims to create accountability for predatory lenders and an easier way to complain if you feel like you're being ripped off. Also, if you're a high school student worried about paying for college, there is the Massachusetts Early College Initiative, which lets you get college credit for free. We'll talk to Chris Gabrielli, the chair of the Massachusetts Department of Higher Education. Join our conversations. Reach us at andanotherthing@nepm.org or across social platforms at @HelloAndAnother.
Welcome back to the show with Maya Schrader. I'm Dara Kennedy. In the United States, only mortgage borrowing tops consumer debt ahead of student loans. 45 million borrowers have accumulated over $1.7 trillion in student loan debt. The average cost of 10 of the most expensive schools in Massachusetts is just over $53,000 for academic year 20 to 2021, with Bard College, Amherst College, and Tufts University leading the way. Alternatively, Westfield State, UMass Amherst, and UMass Boston top the list of 2021 most affordable colleges in the state, and that's according to the New England Association of Schools and Colleges.
According to the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center, the state's public university graduates used to hold the 49th lowest student debt in the country. But that was 20 years ago. The Commonwealth cut funding by some 30% between 2001 and 2019, largely due to tax cuts. So if you're a parent listening right now or a student who's worried about your future finances after college, you're not alone. Along with Representative Natalie Higgins, State Senator Eric Lesser authored the Student Loan Borrower Bill of Rights. It was implemented this month after 6 years of pushing for the reform. The program aims to address the state's student debt crisis, but it's not about eliminating the debt. So we asked the senator, what does it do?
Well, so it does two big things. First, it creates a new requirement that student loan servicers have to get licensed in Massachusetts, and they've got to follow good behavior in order to get that license. So a lot of people, one of the most common is Navient. That's one of the biggest loan servicers, but there's a lot of different servicers. Right now, it's the Wild West. There's no state oversight over how they conduct themselves, how they do business. So from now on, they're going to need to get a license from the Division of Banks to operate. And then very importantly, the second part of the law is that a new office has been created, the Student Loan Ombudsman's Office, in the Attorney General's office, which is really going to be one-stop shopping for helping people navigate issues with their loan servicer. So if you're a person in Massachusetts now, you know, and you're, let's say, just feeling completely overwhelmed by the avalanche of paperwork, your payments keep ballooning, it was very unclear who you turned to. Now with the law passed, you can go to the Student Loan Ombudsman's office in the Attorney General's office, and that ombudsman is going to have real power to investigate the issue. And if they need to take action against the license to, you know, in some cases, if it's really serious, kick the servicer out of the state. So there's going to be a new real cop on the beat in Massachusetts to help enforce good behavior from the servicers. So this is not a debt cancellation. That's a different issue. I'm in support of a lot of the activity happening there. This is really about consumer protections for people who have loans now, who are feeling strangled, frankly, from a system that is completely unresponsive to individual borrowers. I would point out, though, that in many cases, it can and it will result in lower payments for borrowers. Just one example, we have the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. Teachers, police officers, all our public servants that qualify for federal student loan forgiveness. In many cases, the servicers have not even told people that they're eligible for these types of loan assistance programs. Under this new Student Loan Bill of Rights, they're going to be required to let them know. There's also going to now be an ombudsman's office that's going to enforce that. So for a lot of people, they're going to find out that they're eligible for this program that they didn't even know about, and they're going to see real savings as a result. And the other thing I would just point out on this that's important is, people don't choose their servicer. So, you apply for a loan through the Federal Department of Education. You're approved through your FAFSA for that loan. Then the Department of Education assigns that loan to a servicer. And sometimes that servicer assigns it to another servicer. So you're getting in the mail statements from these vague companies with these sort of weird esoteric names that you never chose and you never hired, you never interviewed, you never had the chance to do due diligence on. And some of the cases are pretty outrageous, sending people by, old-fashioned snail mail, unmarked white envelopes, almost hoping that a young person who moves around a lot is going to miss it. And then all of a sudden their interest rates balloon because they missed one payment. There's, pretty horrible cases here of abuse that we're now going to have a whole state office dedicated to fighting.
What is the line then between a legit lender and a predatory lender if people can't choose?
It's a great, great point. I think at a basic level, we should be expecting servicers to follow the law that already exists. And we have cases now, case after case, of the servicers either at best just ignoring the law or proactively ignoring it or misleading people. I can just give you an example. I had a constituent who reached out to me during the advocacy for this law. She lived in East Longmeadow, which borders Connecticut, and she worked as a special education teacher. Obviously, a very important job that we need special education teachers, but it doesn't pay well. And she needed a master's degree to do that work as a special education teacher. She took on debt to get that master's degree, to get that teaching certification. She had two young children, and she was diagnosed with cancer. She had to take a break from her job, of course, because she was in chemotherapy and was getting treatment for her cancer while raising two young kids. She couldn't even get her loan servicer to respond to her phone calls about walking her through what the potential could be for either forbearance or deferrals or payment mitigation. So she actually moved to Connecticut, where they had this law on the books, and she had a student loan ombudsman that was able to work with her to get those payments renegotiated. It's a shock, isn't it, that when the state starts calling the servicers, they're much more responsive than when individuals are calling. So this is going to be a chance, just at a bare minimum, what we're asking these servicers to do is follow what the law already requires, which is forbearance for people that have health emergencies, loan forgiveness for public servants, help for veterans, loan forgiveness programs and interest deferrals for veterans, and other already existing programs.
Do you think the next step is just straight up canceling the debt?
So I absolutely do think that we need to do something to write down this debt. Exactly what that number is or how we do that, that's a subject for federal lawmakers. What I can do on a state level is make sure that our state consumer protection divisions have all the tools that they need to really go after some of the worst offenses. Now, the last thing I would just say, Maya, on this is we need to do more about the inputs, right, also for college, which is on a state level, one of the biggest ways we can prevent the continued growth in debt is by investing in our public colleges and universities, where we've seen tuition go up and up and up every year. So another very important piece of this is making sure that we're investing in UMass, in the state colleges and the community colleges, so they can actually bring tuition down so that we don't have people assuming all of this debt in the first place.
State Senator Eric Lesser, thank you so much for joining us on And Another Thing.
Thanks for having me.
As Massachusetts tries to make it easier for people to contact and negotiate with their student loan agencies, how do lenders feel about the new regulations?
It's not really so much a borrower bill of rights as a servicer cost and licensing bill. At the end of the day, Massachusetts borrowers are still going to owe the exact same amount of money as they owed yesterday. They're still going to have the same interest rates. They're still going to have the same monthly payments. And so substantively, are the things that really matter, I think, to Massachusetts borrowers, nothing has changed.
He says the alliance is in favor of the ombudsman the bill creates.
I think having a third-party place for people to go and raise questions and confirm that what they're being told is correct is a good thing. From a licensing perspective, I don't think it does anything to help Massachusetts borrowers at all.
Buchanan also said the problem this bill solves isn't as widespread as people think, and he suggests the Massachusetts lawmakers focus their attention elsewhere.
I think one of the things that really is challenging here is that, you know, it's a lot of the rhetoric, particularly about this kind of bill, is based on this premise that there's some widespread or systemic issue of servicers improperly servicing a student loan. And when you look at national statistics from actual statistics, not just anecdotes or tweets, that just tells you this is not a big issue. Creating government paperwork regimes that do nothing more than impose costs on to consumers indirectly, probably not a useful exercise of the legislature's time, especially when there are things that they could be doing that would actually impact borrowers, like looking at how we can reduce the cost of tuition. Every person who takes on a loan does so because the cost of education are incredibly high.
According to the Massachusetts Department of Higher Education, state lawmakers did propose an increase of more than $10 million in student financial aid in their latest budget.
According to the Department of Education, nearly 20% of the American population in student loan debt is over the age of 50. That equates to nearly 9 million adults. And while that demographic sees their debt growing faster than other groups, the younger borrower faces a multitude of challenges today. Carl Petrick, professor of economics at Western New England University, tells And Another Thing that the pandemic exacerbated an ongoing problem.
Student debt was a significant problem before the pandemic. It's the largest amount of household debt apart from mortgages. I think it's up to almost $3 trillion. Regarding how much student debt there is out there in totality. So it's a huge amount of money in our macro economy that's going to service debt. And the staggering thing is, again, pre-pandemic, about 25% of student loans were in delinquency or default. That's before the economy shut down. So we've had a significant problem for a long time, and the pandemic has only made that worse. It's worse for people that are younger. The current generation of students coming out of, for the last decade really, have been holding off on buying houses, holding off on buying cars, holding off on even moving out of their parents' homes or moving back into their parents' homes when they graduate, largely because of the amounts of student debt they have. So this burden was already pre-existing before the pandemic. And you've got people that are in their 70s, 80s that still have student loan debt, and they're, you know, not paying it off and at the end of their life. So when you're 21, 22, coming out of college, you're looking at, you know, 50, 60, 70 years, maybe, that you'll be paying your student loans down, even though they're supposed to be paid back in about 20, 30 years. Not a whole lot of people manage that.
The issue is playing out in Western Mass. As the region faces higher housing prices, potential home buyers feel confident in their qualifications to buy a home. In part, Petrick tells us, due to what they are not paying, their student loans.
It's an interesting phenomenon coming out of the pandemic that, you know, people started to leave these cities, you know, New York in particular. And so the Berkshires and Western Mass is a very common place to have a second home, a lot more property. And if you're suddenly working from home and have a couple kids learning from home, having that extra space was very, very tempting. And the housing costs here are low compared to New York City. But as a result, prices of homes have jumped here. Cost of living has been high. On top of that, starting potentially in the end of September, we would have to start paying back our student loans. So on top of everything else going on, we haven't had to pay our student loans. And now we're facing this possibility starting in October that we suddenly will. And that's going to be about $393 out of the economy per student loan borrower at a time when the economy is still very fragile.
And that's one of the reasons why Petrick believes President Biden should extend the CARES Act through March 2022, pausing payments and interest on federal loans. But there's another reason Petrick gives. He says lenders aren't ready for you to start paying again.
They've said we don't have the ability to start payments right now. More than 43 million accounts were switched over to this program where they didn't have to make payments. And now we have to reverse that. And they simply said, we're not ready and bad things will happen. regarding just the logistics of this if you don't extend it. So it's not just for the students. We've had smaller forbearances in the past, and when we reversed them, it was chaos. So you can imagine over 43 million accounts being reversed. The magnitude of just exactly how bad this could be regarding the logistics of it is phenomenal. So just extend it out past when we think it'll be, which would be, you know, March 2022 makes sense. And just say, give the companies a chance to get ready, give students a chance to be ready, and give the economy a chance to be ready.
That was Professor Carl Petrick of Western New England University. And before that, we heard from Scott Buchanan, the executive director of the Student Loan Servicing Association. And another thing, we'll be right back.
People are rushing to get jobs in this economy, right? Kind of depends.
The jobs that come available early in a recovery tend to come first available at the low end, and that's not the right job for everybody.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, post-pandemic life versus pre-pandemic careers, next time on Marketplace.
Stay tuned for Marketplace, which is ahead at 6:30. It's followed at 7 by Fresh Air and at 8 by Jazz a la Mode on New England Public Media. And another thing on NEPM is funded by you and WFCR's partners, Amherst, Hampshire, Mount Holyoke, and Smith Colleges, and the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the mid-50s, partly sunny to start Friday, then increasing clouds in the afternoon with a chance of showers, a high near 80, and sunny on Saturday with highs in the lower 80s.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to And Another Thing. I'm Dara Kennedy. Today we are discussing student loan debt and how Massachusetts' new enacted Student Loan Borrower Bill of Rights will assist with the state's student debt crisis. As mentioned earlier in the show, Attorney General Maura Healey has appointed a student loan ombudsman, one who is responsible for resolving student complaints and educating through the red tape. That kind of help, however, was not available for recent UMass Amherst graduate Timmy Sullivan. Now an executive director of PHENOM, the Public Higher Education Network of Massachusetts, it's a group that fights for debt-free, high-quality public college. He tells us the deficits that he found himself in soon after stepping on campus.
My personal student loan journey, I have $31,750,000 of student debt in my name that I have after graduating from a public university. UMass was the most affordable school for me to go to, and still I had to pay tens of thousands of dollars of tuition and be consigned to $31,750 of student debt. 3 out of 4 of every graduates from a public college in Massachusetts has student debt from graduating from a public college. And in Massachusetts, this is actually uniquely a public college problem. More public college graduates graduate with debt than private college students graduate with debt in Massachusetts, when what we've really wanted is just the chance to learn. And so that is what also got me involved in this organization, PHENOM, the Public Higher Education Network of Massachusetts, because we are fighting for a learning environment in which no one has to take out loans in order to get an education. A public education means that it is publicly financed and a public right for everybody.
PHENOM was closely involved and strongly supported the passage of the Student Borrower Bill of Rights. But as Timmy told us, it doesn't accomplish everything.
What it does not do is get underneath the sort of the root of the problem, which is such a thing as the existence of student debt. So this is a solution to be able to sort of seek redress if you are the victim of unfair lending practices. But PHENOM also supports the idea that people should not have to be taking out loans in order to learn. You know, this would not be a predatory lending for education, would not be a problem if nobody needed to borrow for an education.
Timmy recognizes he is fortunate to even have a high-level education, but is caught in a catch-22. of wanting to pursue further degrees, but needing to find ways to finance his goals.
I have been extremely fortunate to be able to have the opportunity to work at Phenom here, but I also had to take a job immediately after graduating. I was not able to consider as seriously pursuing a graduate degree, which is something that I really want to do. And particularly, I want to teach high school English. That's been my sort of calling for a number of years now. So going on and getting a master's degree in English literature, also being a license to teach in Massachusetts, these are things that are going to take time, but are also going to cost me even more amounts of money up front for learning, as well as adding more debt to my total.
That was Timmy Sullivan, UMass Amherst graduate and executive director of Phenom, which supports the petition to President Joe Biden to cancel student debt. For more information, visit phenomonline.org.
So student debt is not canceled yet, but if you're a Massachusetts high school student, you might want to know about the Early College Initiative. Started by the State Department of Education in 2018, it helps high school students take college courses for college credit for free. The department projects that more than 4,000 students have enrolled this year, and they are all on track to save a collective $5.4 million in college tuition. And two-thirds of those enrolled are Black or Latinx. Chris Gabrielli is the chair of the Massachusetts Board of Higher Education. We asked him whether the program was designed to target specifically those communities.
Yeah, these savings can be really quite considerable. Obviously, you know, it depends on what level of college you go to in terms of what segment you go to. Do you go to community college? Do you go to a four-year state university? Do you go to UMass? Do you go to a private college? And prices vary a lot in higher education. And of course, many of the students we're targeting are eligible for some help from the federal government through Pell Grants and the like, as well as through state financial aid. But nonetheless, I mean, college is for four-year colleges in Massachusetts, you know, probably averages maybe $15,000 per student. And while some of that will be covered by, you know, financial aid and so forth, students could be save thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, and the system saves lots of that money too, because these students are getting it done while they were in high school. So it's both for the students that's saving, but also, you know, for the system. So we estimate that there, in the second year, that there was $5 million worth of college consumed, if you will, digested by students who paid zero out of pocket.
So what's next? Is there any further goals in terms of reducing the debt burden on students?
There are other flavors of early college that people are thinking about. For example, in Springfield, there's a cool program that's being developed to help get young students of color interested in being teachers, particularly in the STEM fields. We have a great desire to diversify our teacher corps, and the best place to do that is to get high school students excited about going into teaching and get them started down those paths, particularly in the STEM fields that we know are such a large part, science, technology, engineering, and math field, STEM, that we know are such a big part of the future of the economy. So there are all kinds of interesting ways you can go with this once you start saying, let's think about which directions kids could go, should go, how do we get them excited and moving? So I think the next 5-10 years is going to be just really, really exciting for what's possible here to help students, you know, step up to the opportunities we can serve up to them. Early college per se is really targeted for first generation college goers at the core, which doesn't mean others aren't welcome, but it's a particularly effective program. And the national data shows it makes the biggest difference for students who might not otherwise go, or who would go but often drop out. So that's who we're targeting. We take for granted, you know, middle-class families where parents have gone to college. I was blessed to be born into one of those, and my 5 kids grew up in one of those. Even then, there's often a lot of friction and complexity in it, but we take for granted how much college knowledge we have and how confident our kids can be because, you know, they've seen it all around them and their siblings and their parents, and how much more challenging it is. There's been a lot of research on this for students who arrive and really don't know how to succeed in college.
Chris Gabrielli, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Dara Kennedy. A reminder, we welcome your comments. Call us, 800-639-9120.
Follow us on social media. We are at Hello and Another, or email us at andanotherthing@nepm.org. I'm Maya Schwader. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.